Your dreams are bigger, bolder, and more badass than the life you're living now, but something just keeps getting in the way. Join certified coach and former therapist Diane Wingert for the Driven Woman podcast. She'll show you how to get rid of whatever is holding you back so you can stop spinning your wheels and up-level your life. Get ready to hop in and buckle up. This is the Driven Woman podcast, and we're heading for the fast lane.
Well, hey, Driven Woman, can I just say that this advice that I hear from so many online business coaches to follow your passion and build a business you love is a very seductive promise and glamorous fantasy, but simply not enough to keep your business boat afloat. Now, don't get me wrong. Passion is important and I think actually necessary, especially in the beginning when you are scared shitless and have no clue. But unless you keep your eye on the bottom line and balance passion with profit, your business might just sink instead of sail. That's why I invited my new Portland pal and the host of the Get the Balance Right podcast, Heather Zeitzwolf, to chat with us today. Heather is a certified public accountant, financial coach, and profit advisor who works with creative entrepreneurs and small agencies. We both have a sweet spot for the first-time female entrepreneur in her 50s because of our own personal histories. If you visit Heather's website, you will see that she lists her attributes as rebel, nerd, activist, entrepreneur, goofball, cult film aficionado, and vegan. And when I saw her name on the list of attendees for the She Podcast Live conference I attend in October, I was determined to meet her. In fact, you will hear at the beginning of the episode, I flat out confess that I stalked her because I did. What you can also look forward to hearing in this episode is that Heather's non-traditional path to becoming a CPA in her 40s and starting her first business in her 50s. Why she chooses to work with creative solopreneurs and small agencies. How she works to make it safe for her clients to be honest about their numbers because of her commitment to helping women dispel money shame. And we get into a lively discussion on our beliefs about money blocks and why so many women have them. So I am very eager to introduce you to my guest, Heather Zeitzwolf. I think this is a fascinating conversation, and I believe you are going to enjoy it just as much as I did. Here we go. So I probably should have started recording a few minutes ago because we have already been having so much fun. And unfortunately, I can't share that with you. However, this lovely lady with the pink hair who is partially hidden, here she comes. Her name is Heather Zeitzwolf. And honest to goodness, I have totally fallen in love with this person. I stalked her. I know, maybe I should have told you that first. I stalked her at the She Podcast Live conference. I already had her on my hit list of people that I wanted to definitely meet and connect with because, as it turns out, Heather lives in Portland, my newly adopted home. And when I first saw her with this pink hair and this incredible energy, I assumed she was a coach or, you know, business coach of some sort. She is a freaking accountant. And I'm like, what? So of course I was curious and it just went from there. So I don't want to steal all of your thunder. I just wanted to cue you up a little bit. Here you are. First, we have to tell them what we were laughing about just a minute ago, because it's not fair that we keep all the good stuff to ourselves. I was trying to pronounce your name, Zeitzwolf, and you shared with me that it's actually not just your name. It's a made-up name. Tell us how that came to be.
It's a made-up name. So my last name was Zeitz and my husband's name was Wolf. And when we got married, we decided, well, what are we going to do? We'll do a mashup. So it's Zeitz Wolf. And that's also the name of my business, Zeitz Wolf Accounting, which now in hindsight, I kind of regret because it is a tongue twister and really a difficult URL.
It is a difficult URL, but Heather, I got to tell you, I think your genius, whether you realize it or not, is that you stand out. And what are we hearing now? You've had multiple careers, as have I. You have multiple degrees, as have I. You are a creative who became an accountant, but brought your frickin' creativity with you. And I think that is just exceptional. You're probably the only pink-haired accountant in the country that I know of, right? But you usually don't, you're not always just pink. You have had multiple colors.
I've had multiple colors, yes. And I know your opinions on that.
We're not going to let them in on that part. It's just a guess. But why accounting? I mean, you had a fashion career. You had, let just go through your story of your evolution to your current incarnation.
Sure. So I grew up with a very theatrical type of a family, and I thought that I was going to have a career in theater. And then I decided I love fashion. And so I went to fashion school first and went to New York and all of this and had this career there and realized that it's all about business. It wasn't about art. That I thought it was going to be about art. It was about business, but it actually made me very interested in business. So I went back to school and got a business degree in the most creative area of business, which was advertising, I felt. And, but while I was there, I had sort of a reawakening of how marketing and advertising is kind of deceivious. And I don't know, it just wasn't something that I really wanted to get into ethically. So I got into market research because I'm a numbers nerd. And I worked in that for many years. I was laid off in my 40s and decided, what the heck do I want to do with my life? I thought about going to law school. I was studying for the LSAT. And then I was like, I don't want to have student loan debt. So I went to PSU where I have my degree in business and talked to them. And they're like, oh, yeah, you just need a few more credits, you know, about a year and you can get a degree in advertising. And I mean, sorry, in accounting. And I'm like, that's what I'm going to do. I'll do that because I love numbers. I'm a spreadsheet nerd and all of that. Made sense to me, not to anybody else in my life. They were like, what? What are you doing? And but I'm sort of left brain, right brain. I don't know. I go in both. Well, you're the brain person. You probably can maybe figure me out. I don't know.
Well, there's so many things I love about you, Heather. And one of them is that you really follow your heart and your curiosity. And I think that's, in a way, one of the ways to have a most successful life, right? I've taken a lot of heat over the years for the fact that I've been married 3 times and I've had like 4 completely different careers. But that's what's right for me. That's what's normal for me. I will stay with something for a good long while, but sometimes I need to reinvent myself and my whole life with it. And I give myself permission to do that. Not that it's easy and not that it's painless, as you well know, but let's come to the point where you were 40 and you realized, oh, I can't continue on this path anymore. I need to do something else. You're probably in a way lucky because so many women in the glamour careers, fashion, beauty, advertising, marketing, those are considered glamour careers. Anything that you are dealing with, entertainment, promotion, whatever, you probably would have aged out and gotten the boot anyway because they always want young, you know? I've worked with many women who've gotten pushed out of creative careers because they were no longer young. And so that leads us to the point where we're either going to reinvent ourselves and do something completely different or start our own business. But you went into accounting, you finished up in your 40s, and did you work in like big firms or did you start working for yourself right away? What's the stitch on that?
I worked for some small firms here in town, and I had sort of this idea that, oh, this is a career that I can kind of grow old with. I can sit at a desk, you know, thinking this is my long-term plan. And just kind of going back to something that you said earlier, like I love challenges. And to me, going into a totally different career was a challenge that I wanted to take on. Studying for the CPA exam, oh my God, that was probably one of the biggest accomplishments I've done in my entire life. And while I was studying for that, people were like, what are you doing this for? Why are you putting yourself through so much pain? So it wasn't an easy thing at all. It wasn't an easy career to switch into. But I did work for some small firms, and I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I've always been fearful of it. Like, what if I lost money? What if I was a failure? All these different things that I, you know, you grapple with. But in my 50s, things kind of change. Like, you're kind of like, well, just screw that. I'm going to try this. I only live once that I know of. I might as well go for it. And what's the worst thing? I have to like put my tail between my legs and be like, okay, it didn't work out and try something else. So that's where I'm at now.
Isn't that fascinating though? I mean, it's, you're speaking one of my favorite topics is that something quite magical happens with women in their 50s. It's probably related to the change in our hormones. If you have kids, it can also be partly related to the fact that by the time you're in your 50s, your kids are mostly grown and flown or maybe long gone, but you become much more aware of the passage of time and the fact that while you are no longer young, you're not yet old either. So it seems like it's this magical moment in life for women. Anyway, I experienced it this way. You experienced it this way. A lot of women do, where they suddenly feel a sense of urgency to do the thing they've always wanted to do, but kept finding reasons not to, because they were afraid, because they couldn't afford it, because they couldn't take the chance, because they had dependent, whatever it is. And by the time you're in your 50s, you're like, well, you've lived enough, you have enough maturity, enough wisdom, enough experience that it's like, well, what if I fail? By that stage of life, you have already failed plenty of times and you're still here. So it's like, maybe I'll just give it a shot. I started my first business in my 50s. You started your first business in your 50s. And now we both work with other women who are doing the same. But let's talk about some of the things that they have to overcome along the way. I have been inviting many of my guests to address this issue of what I consider ambition shaming. I don't know if you experience this, but a lot of people, because I'm very driven, because I keep reinventing myself, because I burn it down and start over and burn it down and start over and do things that are very challenging at an age and stage when many people are happy to just kick back. Like, why can't you ever be satisfied? Why isn't enough enough? Why can't you just stay where you are? It's like, I kind of think of that in a way as ambition shaming, because some of us just have this need to keep striving and keep challenging ourselves and keep learning and keep growing. To me, it's not about being rich or famous. It's about making the most of this precious human life and using the brain that I have for the whole stretch, not just while you're in college. You know, do you agree?
I totally agree. And I, you know, I try to do things that stretch my boundaries. It's very liberating. And in my 40s, I also started doing comedy. I took a stand-up class. And next to the CPA exam, writing stand-up comedy has got to be one of the most difficult things I've ever done. And then I started taking improv, which improv will just slap you back down to reality, because it's like you try to be funny and it doesn't come out right. And you're like, you just have to dust yourself off and keep going. So I did that and sketch comedy, and I had a lot of fun with that. So that was something that was like, again, completely new area for me. But
oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Do you still do any of that?
I don't, just because, you know, focusing on my business, it's taking up most of my time. And yeah. I also have a husband and cats, which you may hear in the background.
I am howling. I've been hearing some little meowing going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all good. No, I think the ability to focus is really important, but I agree with you. I was just thinking, we watched a bunch of comedy, vintage comedy, with some friends that came up for the holiday. And I am reminded that stand-up is probably one of the hardest things you can ever do. Like, just what people think of as funny and how to just be up there, just you and your jokes that may land and they may just lie there and you just have to keep going. Are you a fan of the Mrs. Maisel TV show?
I love that. I wish they would bring another season on. I don't know what's going on with that.
They are supposed to be bringing. I think it may be coming up in March. So yeah, we have a little bit longer to wait, but yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And I have a fascination with Lenny Bruce. So it's really funny that they put Lenny Bruce in there.
Yes. So good. Hey, I want us to talk a little bit about women and their money shame, because I deal with it, you know, helping women start businesses. You deal with it, helping women start businesses. But I'm dealing more from the mindset piece, and you get up into their biz shiz with their numbers. And nothing is as confronting as numbers, right? Like the number on the scale, the number on the balance sheet. It's like you can get up into all kinds of nonsense and drama in your head. But when you face what's on that spreadsheet, shit gets real. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of the things that you see with your clients and what has led you to be an astute observer of women and their money nonsense.
Yeah. So I think part of it goes back to my own money history. So they say that, you know, everybody has sort of this their money mindset comes from their money stories. And mm-hmm. as a child, I was fascinated with money. I would sit on my bed, dump out my piggy bank and all the coins and stack the bills and stack the coins and do it over and over again. And I would teach math to my stuffed animals. And so I was very interested in numbers and all of that from a young age. But when I went to New York my second time, this was in the early 90s. New York is a very expensive place to live.
Yes.
And you basically make enough money to pay the rent and not much more. So I got into credit card trouble there. I was working in the fashion industry. I wanted to have fashionable clothes. And department stores are the ones that are going to give you credit cards in the beginning. So I had a Saks Fifth Avenue card, Lord & Taylor, Macy's. I was going to all these places and buying clothes that I had no business of owning because I really couldn't afford them. And maybe I'd find something on sale, but I wasn't thinking about the interest that was accumulating. I was never really taught that. I grew up in a family where my parents were, my parents had me late in life. So they were from that generation of the Depression era. So they were very frugal. I don't even think my parents had credit cards. So I didn't know anything about credit cards. And I got into a lot of trouble. And you can get into a lot of trouble pretty darn quickly.
Really fast.
Yeah. And it took me years to get out of that. And by the time I was, you know, working in my 30s, I was trying to put money away for retirement. But then, you know, you get laid off and you're like, oh, I'll just use that retirement money. And
it's always
to
the
live
first
on.
To go, isn't it?
Yeah. Again, not a wise move, but many people get in a situation where that may just be their only answer. So I've gone through all of that. Now I'm in my 50s and I'm like, okay, that retirement is looming out there. I had to pay off all that debt, you know, pay off student loan debt, got through all of that. You know, now I have to rebuild up my retirement. So I'm in this scary place where it's like, it's looming out there and I want to take care of myself. But knowing that I went through that, I feel like I can be empathetic to others that are going through that same situation. And I want to help them because I know how horrible it is from my own experience.
It's astonishing how many people do not understand that during their working years, they are not only presented with the need to fund their current lifestyle, but they also need to fund their future lifestyle post working years. Most people are literally spending it as quick as they're making it. Most people are spending actually more than they're making. And there's an entire generation that has been burdened with student loan debt when prior generations did not have that problem. So it's a bit of a clusterfuck because we're not making enough in many cases. We're spending more than we're making and we have all this debt. I don't even want to ask you what you think about Social Security because I'm a few years older than you and it's a very scary thing. But I think bringing it back to this notion that in your 50s is a great time for women to start a business. Because even if you've been an employee all your life, you have more experience, you're more mature, you are more stable in many cases, you can handle a little bit more of the uncertainty, you probably don't have as many dependents, and we're living longer. It is projected that women in our generation are, many of us are going to live into our 90s. So this notion that you can retire at 65 and then live comfortably for the rest of your life, for the vast majority of Gen Xers and boomers, not happening. There isn't enough saved. The cost of living is going up and we're living longer. So just having a business that you own and you can control how much income you make and wrapping that business around your lifestyle, I think is one of the smartest things women can do. A lot of it, I mean, do you find with some of your clients that they become first-time entrepreneurs over 50 because they got phased out, they got cut back, they got laid off, and entrepreneurship is really their only option because nobody wants to hire a woman in her 50s.
Exactly. And COVID really made it a lot worse as well. People were laid off and now they're in this situation. Maybe they worked for a company for many years and thought that they were going to stay there till retirement. And now they were laid off due to COVID. But I want to go back to address something that you were mentioning earlier. When women come to me, you know, women in their 50s, they can be very bold about wanting to start a business. But at the same time, this other area of the finances is where they have the shame around money. Maybe their husband always dealt with the funds. They're at an age where they feel like they should know this stuff, but they don't. Mm-hmm. So then they don't want to ask questions. They have gone to, when people come to me, they'll say like, well, my previous CPA or accountant, I was afraid to ask them questions. They always make me feel stupid. So I want to have this like no shame approach where I want people to be able to ask me any question about this because it should be an open conversation. I feel to me when I'm helping people with their finances that it's an intimate relationship. I'm looking at something that maybe they wouldn't even show their minister this information. You know, it's like,
it's so true, Heather.
I'm looking at real personal information and I take that very seriously. And so when we look at, you know, how much they're making, what they want to put into retirement, all these things are very personal conversations. And a lot of women, when they start a business, they do it because they're passionate about something and they're not thinking about the numbers. And then they don't even know oftentimes how much they're even making, if they're profitable or not. And most of the time, they're not paying themselves enough. That's for sure. So there's a lot of ambiguity when they come to me about finances. And so anyways, I take it very seriously about the personal part of that.
I think it must be very powerful for your clients to experience firsthand the no shame approach. And I absolutely agree with you. You know, we work with a lot of the same types of clientele. And oftentimes, a woman is either forced into developing her own income stream because she can't get a job or she's been pushed out of the workplace or because of COVID, she can't go back, or she may have chronic health issues so that she can't conform to the normal 9-to-5 schedule or whatnot, or may have aging parents to care for. Even aging pets can be very time consuming. I have seen a huge increase in the number of women who are starting businesses in their 50s from their laptop. Because after being, you know, cooped up at home for a year and a half, they realize at first it was painful, but then they adjusted. And now they're like, I wonder what is possible. But you're right. Usually they're not starting with the numbers. When you ask things like, so what are your expenses for this? Or it's not really, you don't really need to invest in that just yet. Like they're wanting to invest in a, you know, $2,000 for a logo when they haven't had their first customer yet. I'm like, nope. Or, you know, how they don't know what their tax bracket is, or they don't know about quarterly taxes. And while maybe another accountant might say, well, what kind of business do you intend to have if you don't know the basics? And they're going to, they know they still need a CPA, but they're going to feel too ashamed to ask the questions that will actually empower them. Because you're right, doctors do this too, by the way. They act as though, because they know, everyone should know. This is common knowledge. I'm like, nope. The number of people who do not know why they're taking the specific medications they're taking, or even maybe what their diagnosis is, because they're too intimidated and the doctor is not, doesn't have the attitude that you do, that this is an intimate relationship. You have trusted me to know these intimate things about you. Let me bring you into the conversation. Do you find that any of the women, like, even though you have a very anti-shame approach, do they start revealing a lot of their money baggage and their money mindset and why they just want to help people. They would do it for free if they could. They know they have to charge, but they don't want to charge that much. And I see a lot of this stuff too. You're smiling.
Yeah, a lot of conversations around pricing. That's one area where a lot of women struggle with because they feel like, oh, I'm not worthy. No one's going to pay me this. And it really goes back to some really deep-seated things, sometimes in their childhood. So I do work with my clients around money mindset to kind of dig into their money story to understand where they're coming from and why they're making certain decisions. Me personally, because I grew up with parents from the Depression, I have a tendency to not want to pay people to do things. So I end up doing everything myself. And I know it is a terrible thing. And I've talked a lot on my podcast about this. And it's a big hurdle for me. So we all have issues. One of my clients, she had something where it was like her dad would tell her something about, you know, she wasn't worthy or whatever. So now in turn, she doesn't want to contact her clients to say, oh, you owe me on this invoice that's like 90 days old. You know, it's all the way back from to her childhood, something her dad told her that is affecting her now in her business. It's really kind of crazy. But so it's interesting to go back and learn about where people, where these ideas came from and how they're dealing with it now. And how can we kind of break through that and change their mindset so that they can actually get the money they deserve in their business?
Hey there, it's Diane. Whether you are a brand new listener or have been with me from the beginning, I want to let you know how much I appreciate that you take the time out of your week to listen to the Driven Woman podcast. I love knowing that there are women all over the world whose lives are being changed for the better simply by listening to our solo episodes, guest expert interviews, and client success stories. Some of them tell me so in podcast reviews, in DMs on Instagram, and by email. And I love, love, love hearing from them. But you know, for many of us, we are not going to be able to reach our most important goals without guidance, support, and accountability. The kind you get from an expert coach who truly understands what it's like to build a business, even though you're afraid, even though you're uncertain, even though you don't have it all figured out, because that coach has done it themselves and helped other people as well. So whether one-to-one coaching is what's right for you because you want a highly customized approach, or you really prefer to learn and grow and be challenged as part of a group, I've got you. There are links in the show notes. You can let me know that you're interested and we will take the next step together. I promise I will not invite you to work with me unless I think you're ready, unless I think I'm the right coach for you, and unless I am 100% confident that we can blow your mind and rock your world together, because that is the only kind of outcomes that I am interested in creating. So let me know if that sounds right for you. I just wanted to make sure that you knew there is more available to you than just listening to this podcast. But that being said, I'm so glad you're here. Want to know what one of my clients has to say about the experience of working with me? Have a listen to this.
So I remember when we talked about what you introduced as habit stacking, so pairing your habits. And when you did initially bring that up, my initial reaction was like, ugh, like that sounds awful. Like, I don't want to do that. But that was like one of the first things that one of the first shifts that our work together had changed. And that is something that I'm grateful for every day. So the first thing I do in the morning is I go pee. And so what your advice was, take your medication, you know, right after, have your glass of water there in the bathroom. And so that's sort of my daily routine is going to the bathroom, taking my medication, contacts, coffee. Yeah. And it's great because it just cuts out any chance of forgetting, which then would lead to kind of lollygagging around and then like, oh, wait, have I taken it? I should take it. Wait, but this one other thing. And so that really starts off the day so consistently and well. So that is the first thing. And then with regards to the rest of my morning routine, my best friend and I, we live together and we exercise in the morning now. So we've been doing that for the past 4 months, like at least 4 days a week. And so we do Beachbody and it's just really fun because we do have the accountability of there's going to be someone waiting for you. So your butt better be up.
Oftentimes in my experience, and I'd be curious to know what your experience with this is, I see it as having like multiple layers. Like on the one hand, just being female, we are culturally conditioned to want to help others and expect nothing in return but their satisfaction, not even gratitude. Just we should want to help other people because that's what females do. It's called being nurturing. It's called being nice. And we get a lot of social approval for that. So it's kind of expected. And if a woman is more self-focused, I prefer that instead of selfish. She's more self-focused than others focused. People have all kinds of problems with that. They think she's conceited. They think she's a bitch. They think she's stuck up. They think she thinks she's too good for it. It's like, no, she's self-focused. You are other-focused. Both options are viable. You get to choose for yourself. That's outrageous thinking for so many people because most of us have been raised that don't take the last piece, you know, do unto others. And well, do you really need all that? Why are you buying another pair of shoes? You don't need that. So even if your parents didn't tell you things like money doesn't grow on trees and, you know, implying that you're greedy or you're selfish or, you know, if you want to make more money, that there's something wrong with that. Plenty of us experience that after we leave home. We hear, you know, a lot of women don't want to make more money than their male partner. Now, I met many women who do and don't have a problem with it. But in the older generations, women 50s and 60s and above, oftentimes that would feel very shameful that it sort of implies that their partner isn't successful enough. So she needs to somehow supplement that. I also see a lot of women feel that it's not maybe that they don't think that what they're doing has enough value. It's that other people can't afford that. So I don't want to charge that. I also see a lot of women get stuck in the trap of bartering endlessly because it's really hard for them to ask for money and receive it. So bartering just leaves money completely out of the equation. Right? I think one of the more insulting things that women hear is that if you aren't making money, you don't have a business, you have a hobby. I know it's really hard to hear, but wouldn't you agree that it's true?
Yes. So, and in a lot of people that I work with, they come to me and they have a business, and I'm putting that in air quotes, but really what they have is a hobby. According to the IRS, at least, it looks
according
like a
to
hobby.
The IRS,
mm-hmm. It looks like a hobby. So we have to kind of work through that and make sure that they actually are treating it like a business and not like a hobby. And oftentimes they think they are running a business, but because they're not doing certain things, it technically is a hobby to the IRS and not a business. So it's something I do help my clients with to actually put things in place so it's actually a business.
Well, do you mind sharing what one or two of those are? Because I'm thinking, gosh, I don't even know if I know what the answer is.
Oh, well, so some people might sell things like Amway. I'm just using that as just an example. Mm-hmm. But they are calling it a business, but really they're not functioning like a business. So what happens is when the IRS says that you have a hobby and not a business, they say that you have to claim all the income from this hobby, but you can't deduct any of the expenses from the hobby. So you want to make sure that it's clear that you are running a business. So I've had people come to me that were like bloggers, that were travel bloggers, and they're traveling all over. And it's like, I don't think the IRS is going to let you deduct all this travel expenses because this looks like a hobby to me. This does not look like a business. So this is probably completely different from what you're talking about. But so when I hear hobby, I'm thinking IRS hobby.
No, but yes and no, because I think that a lot of times people will say, oh, I want to start a podcast. I'm going to start a business and have a podcast. Okay. You do realize that podcast is going to be an expense, like podcasting. For anyone listening who's thinking, I love the Driven Woman podcast. I'm going to start a podcast and make all kinds of money. No, probably not. Not for a long time, because podcast is an expense. So every month, even if you're a DIYer, you have expense for hosting and so forth that you will be expending. Nobody pays you. You might notice that you're listening to this podcast for free. You're welcome. But nobody pays you to have a podcast. Nobody pays you to have a blog. The government is certainly not going to pick up the tab for all that travel so you can write about it for free to your audience. But it's really interesting how many people think, but I'm spending a lot of time and energy doing this thing for other people to benefit from. What do you mean it's not a business? Because there's no exchange of value. What are some of the other things that you see new people who are either just starting a business or like they're like, oh, I can't, for example, setting up a separate account.
Oh God, don't get me started on that one. So that's probably one of my biggest pet peeves is that when people start businesses, they just start it with their regular bank account, or they do a commingling of their business account and their personal, and then they're exchanging money and or buying things with their business account, like they're paying for personal things with their business account, and then it's all commingled. And the people that, you know, when they come to me, they're probably not keeping any kind of bookkeeping or anything like that. So now it's just this like mixture, and that I have to extrapolate all the different expenses from the personal, from the business. And it's just really messy. So it's just best to do it right from the beginning. Get a business account, just use the business account for the business. And if you can't afford groceries or something, take a draw from the business, put it in your own bank account. Don't use the business credit card. I mean, I see all kinds of crazy stuff like that. The other thing is some other key things. Again, knowing your numbers, don't just look at your bank balance and think like, oh, I got money in the bank, or, oh, I hardly have any money. I guess I don't owe any taxes. You know, it's like you need to know exactly how much you're making. Hopefully you have some kind of books, whether it's a spreadsheet, and you know, it depends on the level of how complex the business is. Maybe a spreadsheet is all you need, but bookkeeping is, to me, is like one of the most important things that you can do with your business, because at least you can look and see what your net income is and then figure out how much you're going to owe in taxes every quarter. Taxes are not going to go away. That is just not like this like thing that you don't have to pay. I mean, that is an expense.
You may forget about them, but the government
will. The government's never going to forget, no. And it's mind-boggling to me that people forget that, but it's, you know, because I'm working in it all the time. But it's an easy expense to forget because you're not getting a bill from the IRS every month. You might be getting a bill from MailChimp or whatever, but not the IRS. So it's best to get things set up from the beginning, knowing how much you need to, you know, work with an accountant, figure out how much you need to send in for estimated taxes. I mean, that's one of the, you know, big mistakes that I see people make is not sending in estimated taxes. And then they just have this giant bill and penalties and interest and all of that. So that's an easy fix.
Well, yeah. And I'll tell you what, I must admit, when I first started my first business, I did not factor in, you know, of course, I was like the typical therapist. I just want to help people. I'm like, you sound like you're a contestant in the Miss America contest. I just want to help people. But it's truly how so many women start a business. They just want to help people in some way. And it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. We just need to couple it with, I just want to help people and have a profitable business doing so. I think it's one of the things that I think really messes people up and totally fuels the money shame and just all of the ways that we get in our own way and hold ourselves back is this notion that, okay, if you're going to have a career, you can either make an impact, like make a difference in the world, or you can make money. There's somehow like it's an artificial disconnect that if you are doing meaningful work, if you are helping people, you shouldn't want to make money for that, because that's a whole other different category. I'm like, but why? You take money for your services. I take money for my services. I provide value. You provide value. We help people and we run profitable businesses. But I find that's one of the real key core fundamental issues that a lot of women struggle with. I'd be curious to know what your thoughts are, Heather, about where that comes from.
Oh, okay. Well, one thing I want to tag team on what you're saying is that if you make money, then you can actually have a greater impact because then you can donate money to a charity that you really believe in. Or if you are making enough money in your business that allows you to have more free time, you can volunteer. So there's ways of impacting. You can also utilize maybe if you are charging enough with folks, then maybe there are other people that you can help. For instance, I have a client that she went through she was a victim of domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And her boyfriend at the time was forcing her to bring home more money, otherwise he would beat her. And so she didn't have any taxes taken out of her wages. And she came to me owing years of back taxes, which was horrible. So I've given her my services at a really like dirt cheap level, just because I felt like I wanted to help her. But I can't do that for everybody. You know, I have to make, I have to make a living. But in the beginning, when I started my business, I was doing a lot of that. And then I had to, cut that out because I was just struggling because I was just helping others and not helping myself.
I'm just thinking about, we come from a culture that as women, we're just supposed to want to, be helpful to other people with no expectation. And we are shamed for being ambitious. We're shamed for wanting to have more of anything, whatever it is. More is always bad. Like you should make do. You're greedy, you're selfish, you're glutton, you're whatever. But I also think many of the professions that we come from, there's another level of indoctrination. For example, my previous career I was a psychotherapist. And there's something in psychotherapy in private practice called the sliding fee scale. Now, many community mental health agencies have this as well. But in a community mental health agency, it makes sense that there's a sliding fee scale because you're serving a wide range of people from the community. Some have resources, some do not. So a sliding fee scale allows everyone in the community to get the mental health services they need at the price that they can afford, knowing that there are government contracts and donations that are compensating the agency for any shortfall. Well, most of us came into private practice as psychotherapists out of those agencies. And so we brought that sliding fee scale with us. But when you are a psychotherapist in private practice, and people ask if you have a sliding fee scale because they used to go to a community mental health agency and that's what they're used to, most therapists will continue to honor that practice. But a sliding fee scale does not allow you to set aside for retirement, for taxes, for, none of that. So meanwhile, you've actually taken now a pay cut from what you used to make as an employee in an agency because there's no other source of income other than you. And I think a lot of times when people come out of agency work or in just working in it, they never see the calculations of taxes. They just know that this is how much I earn and this is how much I get. And it's kind of like a magic trick that money just disappears, but you don't know exactly why or where it went. So they don't actually understand the mechanics of the tax structure and all of that. And I think that was one of the harder things for me to learn when I went into business for myself. The rate that I was charging in the beginning, I was not calculating taxes. I was not figuring out all these other things. So I was literally, and I was setting my own fees. So I way, way, way underpaid myself. And here's some of my own little money nonsense. The first time I raised my rates, I raised them $5.
Ooh.
$5. And I was sweating buckets thinking they'll all leave. And I'm like, it was hardly even worth the bother of announcing my rate increase for $5. First of all, it made no difference to them, but it also made no difference to my bottom line. So, but that just goes to show you, I was a highly educated and very good at what I did, but that five extra dollars felt like I'm for sure going to go to hell. Like, craziness.
Yeah. When you raise your rates, you really see which clients really appreciate you and which ones don't, and really understand your value that you give to them. When it comes to pricing, though, this is guilty of men and both men and women. They don't look at all the factors that go into an offer. they just think, okay, this is what I want to make. Maybe they've looked at another coach or whoever offering at that price. And they're not thinking about, okay, like you mentioned, tax. And then all the other expenses, like if they're doing a course on Kajabi or whatever it is, like you've got all these fees that you have to pay. And they don't think about that. It's not calculated in there. So they don't even know if they're profitable on what their offer is. So it just basic things like that. I mean, to me, it seems basic, but if you're not looking at your numbers, you would not even know if you are profitable or not. You think, oh, I'm making all this money. Yeah, but okay, again, there's the taxes, all the other expenses that are happening that you need to consider. And getting people to raise their rates sometimes can be difficult. But if you show yes. them that they're not making any money, then they're like, oh my God. Like I did a calculation for one of my clients not too long ago, and I was putting in all these different factors and he hadn't even thought about. And then when we figured it out, he was actually making negative money for his offer. And he was like, oh my God, like that just showed you all that he had more expenses than what it was that he was delivering. So it's really eye-opening when you start looking at data, and it's just such an important thing, you know, but it has to, you start with, you have to at least have clean books to be able to start.
Numbers don't lie. Well, I love your podcast, Get the Balance Right, because it's like, if you are not paying attention to the bottom line, you will be limited into how much value you can create in the world. Bottom line.
Like, yeah, if you're not paying
attention, well, you will. And I used to think, why do so many people fail in small business? Why do so many businesses not make it? And it's like, well, there's actually quite a lot of things to keep up with. Mm-hmm. And most small business owners are not in it for the money, despite what, you know, people who don't work for themselves may think. But most of the time, they really just want to deliver their product or service and serve other people and meet the needs of their family. But the things that we don't pay attention to, we can't get the balance right. We have no chance to get the balance right because we're only putting half the things into the equation. In our last few minutes together, Heather, could you tell us a story about, you know, maybe something heartwarming, a particular client, obviously not disclosing their identity or anything, but which may represent kind of a more typical scenario of this person came to me and this is how they're doing now.
Oh, okay. So I had a client that worked in video. So I have a lot of clients that do graphic design, video, websites, that sort of thing. And this person was spending a lot of money on contractors. And again, it was one of those things where I started to look at it. It was like, this person was not bringing home hardly any money for all of the effort that this person was doing. So, you know, I brought it to this person's attention and they started changing things in their business. And then now they're finally making money and they've switched how they're doing their contractors and all of that. So another person that I work with, I saw this other potential in them. We talked about other different revenue streams. And then this person implemented that and now is making way more in their business. So there's like all these different little tweaks that you can do to make more money, but you have to look at the different levers in the business. So it's, are you spending too much on marketing? Like another client was spending so much on marketing, but it wasn't even bringing in the revenue that it should. Really, that person was making their most of their money from networking. So it actually was, if they did more networking, then they could bring in more revenue. So it's looking at this different things, like, is my pricing right? Am I spending too much on marketing expenses? What about labor costs? Labor costs is another thing that's really something that should be examined. So all these different things that you can look at in your business. So it's not really a heartwarming story, but that's, you know, it's kind of the nature of how all this kind of works.
But it is, to me, it's a heartwarming story because you literally, in just this last couple of minutes, just demonstrated that you actually do so much more for your clients than just keep their books.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you just brought in, like, it's really business strategy when you help people understand that not only are you not charging enough, you're not paying enough, you're out of balance here. You are spending a lot on this, but if you stopped spending so much on this and you actually invested a little more time on that, your business would be much more profitable because the expenses are not following the revenue. You're throwing money after something that's really not giving you an ROI. But if you spend a little more time over here, and that's really business strategy. I think that's the other thing is a lot of people think an accountant just takes the numbers from what you've done and plugs them into something and then just tells you how much that you need to pay. And it's kind of like a lot of people feel it's almost like going to the dentist. They know they should, but they really don't want to. But your accountant really should be your cheerleader, your silent partner, and really the person who has your back and is looking for your blind spots in your business, your money leaks, mm-hmm. Where your money is pooling and stagnating, but it's not thriving. Money is energy. It's not personal. Even though we attach all kinds of thoughts and emotions and memories and beliefs to it, it's neutral. It is just a form of energy. It is a form of exchange. And your way of looking at it, I would hope, and it seems like it does, removes a lot of the mental baggage, the shame, the confusion, the doubt, the intimidation. And it's like, well, if we just sort of like Tetris this a little bit, like move this over here and move that over there, this could actually be fun.
I think this stuff is really fun. And I do want to add one little thing that I wanted to mention earlier and I forgot to, was that—
Did you remember it?
Yeah. So—
Yay.
A lot of people think, oh, if I just spend more in my business, then I won't have to pay as much in tax. That is not a good approach to just spend money because you're actually taking money away from yourself, spending it. And instead, I would say, look into having a retirement fund. That is a better way to put your money if you want to, you know, lower your tax burden, get a retirement fund with your business. So, and this is all just, I just want to say that this is all, you know, just informational. You really should talk to a CPA tax person for any of the stuff that we've talked about today.
Yes. But they should definitely follow you and listen to your podcast. And what's the favorite way that you like people to stay up with what you have to offer? Because a lot of people can learn so much just from listening to your podcast and following you online. If they end up hiring you as their accountant, you know, that's another level of commitment. But you are a wealth of information and you're just really fun too. So where would you like people to follow you?
Thank you. Thank you for asking. So the podcast is called Get the Balance Right, and it's available on all podcasting platforms. The easiest way to find me is on Linktree. You can go to Get the Balance Right, and I have all of my things on there. I've got free workshops. I've got some group coaching coming up. There's a whole array of things on there. So you can access it through Linktree, Get the Balance Right.
I will make sure that we link to that in the show notes. And anything new that you have that you're looking forward to for first quarter 2022 that's not too early to announce now?
Oh, that's in my business or the podcast?
Anything you want to announce?
Yeah. So I'll be unveiling some more group programs. So I really love working with groups because I think it's a great way to not only help more people, but they can work and mastermind together. And that way I'm able to also help people that may not be able to afford my services one-on-one, but I can at least help them in a group setting. And I do have a Facebook group called Get the Balance Right. It's for female entrepreneurs and they can join that and ask me questions and all that good stuff.
Oh, this is too good. I will make sure that we link to all of this in the show notes. And if by the time we air this episode, your new group program is already launched, make sure I have the link to that so people can find out more.
Okay, thanks.
Yay.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us. Yeah, this was fantastic. And I want to keep seeing what you're up to. And of course, I have to keep paying attention to what your hair color is. I really like the pink, but you know, I'm sure it'll be changing sooner or later. So
yeah,
for sure. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Driven Woman podcast with Diane Wingert. Want more straight talk and strategy each week that will take you from spinning to winning? Don't forget to hit subscribe in your podcast player so you won't miss a single episode. Then head on over to the Driven Woman free and private Facebook group community. See you there.